Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Hi everyone, this is Klaatu, and this episode I wanted to cover the pantheon called Pagana. Gods of Pagana is the book, and it was written back in something like 1915, very, very early, turn of the previous century. It was written by Lord Dunsany, and his book was, from what I can tell, kind of a landmark for the time. It was a big influence on contemporary fantasy authors, and it has since fallen into public domain, so it's kind of fair use at this point. And from what I've heard and what little I've read online about the book, it was a big influence on notably Lovecraft. Now his pantheon, the whole book is about, actually I don't know how many pages because I read it on my e-reader, my little Kobo e-book reader, but it's not a long read. It took me maybe an afternoon to get through it all, maybe a full day after I read it and then kind of processed it for this show, and another week after that to kind of format my notes in such a manner that they're useful to other people. And to that end, to make it useful to you, my dear listener, and to other people, I've published a short, about an 18-page summary, but more than just a summary, it is all of the gods in Pagana noted with sort of a loose structure of alignment and domain coverage. It's not a complete work that I've published. It's kind of hastily put together, and maybe it's something someday I'll revisit. I'm not really sure. I feel like if the pantheon was a little bit more profound, I maybe would have done a little bit more work on this particular publication, but I did want to at least put what I did out there so other people could use it. So I invite you to download that. It's free, although you can pay what you want, so you can donate if you want, but there's no need to. It's certainly fine to download it for free. And the source material is also free, of course. It's public domain. You can get it at Gutenberg.org, Project Gutenberg, lots of great public domain texts, or LibriVox, LibriVox, also has it. That's a public domain audiobook site. Volunteers read a bunch of classics, really, and you can get that as well. So all over the place you can get this information. Now, I'm going to say, I did come to this Gods of Pagana book with higher expectations than I believe were satisfied. And it's my fault. It's not Lord Dunsany's fault. But I kind of expected, I came in expecting sort of a lot of soap opera and drama and kind of something that leans a little bit towards Olympus, maybe. And, or even Lovecraft's gods, which while aren't, the personal relationships aren't really defined that well between the gods. I mean, there's a lot to work with. And these gods, he really kind of just, it's an overview. It's an overview of all the gods of Pagana. And since they're all fictional, the overview is, it feels a little bit light. So you just have to be prepared for that. And I think the spin on that I can put, that I put for on it for myself, is that there's a lot of flexibility to be gained here. And it's not just because he wasn't very specific. I mean, that is pretty nice, I guess. I mean, you've got all these gods, you've got how they were created and the structure of all the gods, but you have a lot of flexibility in terms of, well, what is this god like? Is this god a male or a female? Is it a god or a goddess? Or is there no gender in your divinity? So yeah, you've got a lot to work with in that sense. And in addition to that, he builds in a lot of flexibility, which we'll get into shortly here, but there's a system to this that guarantees a lot of flexibility, which I really actually quite like. And it kind of made me think of something that I'd never really thought about when creating pantheons, which is polytheism gone wild. Like, instead of having 11 or 14 or 12 gods or whatever you need to, or 9 gods, you know, whatever you need to fill that alignment chart, have 1,000 and just come up with a god whenever you need a god for something, whether it's going to sleep or moving a stone or killing your enemy. You know, there can be a god for each and every one of those things. And you could go fine grain. Killing your enemy with a sword, you have to appeal to one god, and with a warhammer, a different god. So huge amounts of flexibility, and it's built in, so we'll get into that. And of course, I'm getting ahead of myself, so let's just start at the beginning. In the beginning, there was fate and there was chance, and they got into a game and cast lots, and the winner of this game went to Mana Yud Sushai, which was the thing that existed, and said, "Now make gods for me, for I have won the cast, and the game is to be mine." Now, no one knows whether fate or chance hired Mana Yud Sushai to make these gods. We will never know, probably. But whichever one made the order, Mana Yud Sushai complied and created a bunch of gods. And after creating these gods, Mana Yud Sushai became tired, and around the same time, one of the gods, presumably, it's not very clear whether this entity is a god or not, but I'm assuming it's a god. His name is, its name is Skarl, S-K-A-R-L, made a drum and started a steady drumming. This lulled Mana Yud Sushai into a deep slumber. When Mana Yud Sushai awakens, Mana Yud Sushai will bring an end to all worlds and gods. So Mana Yud Sushai remaining asleep is a really big deal. It's really important. Since it is so important, like, reality will cease to exist when Mana Yud Sushai awakens, no one may pray to Mana Yud Sushai. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea, that here's this big important god, the creator of all other gods, and no one can pray to God. Now, in spite of this, though, it's worth mentioning that there is a cult to Mana Yud Sushai, and it's led by a prophet named Ud, O-O-D, lives in a land called Sundari. He lives in a sequestered temple. There's no windows. They've got no awareness of day or night inside the temple. And he and his fellow priests believe, first and foremost, that Mana Yud Sushai is the only god, or at least the only one that's important. And even though it is forbidden to pray in the temple, because again, no one prays to Mana Yud Sushai, but they do chant to Mana Yud Sushai all day and all night in hopes of awakening Mana Yud Sushai and bringing about the end times. So that's Mana Yud Sushai. It's the prime god, the first entity, other than fate and chance, I guess. It created all the other gods. Strictly speaking, it's almost, I guess, in a way, weird to think of Mana Yud Sushai as a god, because no one, if you were a cleric to Mana Yud Sushai, you kind of wouldn't have any interaction with Mana Yud Sushai. But honestly, that's pretty consistent throughout most of the gods of Pagana. Very few of the gods of the major gods, the main gods, these first 11 or so that were created, none of these gods, who we'll talk about in a moment, none of these gods accept prayers. No one wants anyone to pray to them, and that's really unique. And within the D&D universe, I feel like it's quite unusual. Usually, you know, prayers and followers sort of feed into a god's power, I think, is the sort of established mythos of a lot of the different religions. And the fact that none of these gods accept prayer, it makes it a really unique pantheon and kind of intriguing. So to me, I don't feel like prayers and rituals and things like that or vocal prayers would matter to these gods. Like, a cleric wouldn't say a prayer to gain a blessing or to prepare spells or whatever. They would have to do something else. And it's also notable to make mention of the fact that all of the gods that Mana Yudzushai created, originally they didn't speak. They spoke only in sign language or with signs. So it's mentioned a couple of times in the source material that when they're talking to each other, they make signs. They make their sign or whatever, and that's how they communicate. So I obviously kind of, not obviously, but I imagine it sort of as a rune or something. Maybe you're more creative, have something else in mind, but that's how they communicated. They didn't actually use words, even when they were planning out how to make the rest of the universe. And that is something to note, that Mana Yudzushai only made the gods. Mana Yudzushai made a bunch of gods and then went to sleep. That's Mana Yudzushai's role. So, in an attempt to bring this into the D20 realm, I decided that I would say maybe alignment would be lawful neutral for Mana Yudzushai. Definitely not a good or a bad god. Maybe even a true neutral, but a lot of these gods of Pagana kind of lean toward neutral, to be honest. And I took lawful neutral for Mana Yudzushai, because when Mana Yudzushai awakens, everything's going to end no matter what. There's not really a debate about it. It is reality is going to end. And that's just the way things are going to be. I figure proper, you know, domains that maybe Mana Yudzushai could have some influence over would be artifice, knowledge, law, and magic. Possibly void as well, but I kind of stuck with those because I was feeling that at the time. It's up for debate. Rituals. Again, you can't pray to Mana Yudzushai. Even the gods don't pray to Mana Yudzushai because no one wants to wake Mana Yudzushai. I figure since there's an established, in the canon, there's an established practice that you can chant to Mana Yudzushai. I figure if you're a cleric of Mana Yudzushai, that's what you would do. You would chant to Mana Yudzushai to prepare your spells or whatever. So that's Mana Yudzushai. It's in Pagana, that's the realm of the gods. That's where Mana Yudzushai is. From Pagana, this realm of the gods, flows the Imrana, the River of Silence. Silence is a big deal with the gods of Sushai, the gods of Pagana. It starts with Mana Yudzushai and just kind of trickles down. At the gates of Pagana, so if a player character was going to try to get into Pagana, there are two constellations. There's Yum and Gotham, and they are the sentinels of Pagana. No human has actually ever made it to Pagana except a guy named Zordak. And Zordak was a shepherd, and we'll talk about him later, actually, because he ascended into godhood. But he didn't get to Pagana by his own volition. He was brought there by the gods because they were bored one day. Okay, so the next god that we're going to talk about is Skarl, S-K-A-R-L. He's the drummer that was beating the drum that lulled Mana Yudzushai. Well, now Skarl has to keep beating that drum because he knows... I'm sorry, I keep saying he, and really the text is very light on gender, so I don't know who is a he and who is a she most of the time, so you'll just... I try to avoid using them and just try to use the name, but habit is difficult to transcend when speaking quickly, so if I do that, just know that gender is not really discussed. But then again, interrelationships really aren't discussed at all either, so whether it even matters what gender these gods are is up for debate. So anyway, Skarl has to keep beating the drum that Skarl created, because Skarl knows that if Skarl stops beating the drum, Mana Yudzushai will awaken, and everything will end. Skarl sits at the mists before the feet of Mana Yudzushai, above all other gods in Pagana. There are two conflicting theories of what effect Skarl's drumming has upon our reality. One is that the worlds and the suns are echoes of Skarl's drumming. And the other is that all the worlds and suns and everything are dreams that Manayud Sushai is having, inspired by the drumming. So either way, the drumming is pretty darn important, and it kind of, I think, maintains everything, or it keeps everything in existence, pretty much. Because again, if it stops, then Manayud Sushai awakens and everything ends. Skarl's alignment I took as neutral, because Skarl doesn't really seem to care about anything except beating the drum. And to me, that says that as long as everything is going steady, then that's good. Potential domains, I would say liberation, nobility, protection, and strength. And that's just kind of the vibe I got from Skarl. Skarl has a very strong sense of duty. He knows what his purpose is, and that is why he continues to beat the drum, and he knows that when Manayud Sushai awakens and everything ends, he will wander off somewhere else and do whatever he is next meant to do. That's what the text says, and I don't know if that means that when Manayud Sushai awakens, Skarl still exists, or whether Skarl is just a god of faith and is assuming that when things stop existing, then there will be some other after-life existence. I'm not really sure. Clerics of Skarl, I imagine, could do a drumming or some kind of chanting in perfect rhythm, as if in time with the drumming of Skarl, to recover their, you know, to gain their blessings or recover their spells or whatever. Next god is Dorozhand. Dorozhand is the god of destiny. Dorozhand is a harbinger of endings, notably the ending of everything. That's pretty much all the source text says about Dorozhand, so I took the alignment for Dorozhand to be lawful neutral, because, again, the end is going to happen no matter what. That sounds pretty lawful to me, and having no bias, I just figure, yeah, neutral. Domain, darkness, rune, repose, and void. A harbinger of endings, I don't know. That just seems like an appropriate domain collection for a harbinger of endings. You could even take it a little bit possibly eviler, more evil, and make Dorozhand sort of like Death or the Grim Reaper. I mean, that's a harbinger of ending. So you could go in that direction, and maybe in a revision I will lean more towards that direction. But we don't have a whole lot to go off of with Dorozhand. For rituals, I figure maybe the act of finishing some process, you know, whether it's grand or simple. In closing a circle, a cleric honors the god of destiny. Because that's kind of the vibe that I got from Dorozhand, is that the important part of things are the finish, the end, the way that they conclude. Next god is Hoodrazai, Hoodrazai, Hoodrazai. Initially, Hoodrazai was the god of mirth, but when Hoodrazai overheard Manayud Sushai murmur whilst sleeping, Hoodrazai accidentally learned the secrets of how all the gods were created. Now Hoodrazai has no mirth and stands alone in Pagana, and speaks to no one, again silence, because Hoodrazai knows too much, essentially. So Hoodrazai was really brought down by accidentally learning more than Hoodrazai ever wanted to know. Again, not a whole lot to go off of, and I gave Hoodrazai an alignment of neutral. I feel like initially Hoodrazai would have been something else. When Hoodrazai was the god of mirth, it would have been a completely different story, but definitely get the sense that after learning a lot of stuff about the behind-the-scenes mechanisms of the universe, Hoodrazai changed. So I'm going neutral with Hoodrazai. The domains, I would say destruction, glory, madness, and magic. And that's a bit of a weird mix, I realize, and I kind of like that. I kind of like the idea that one god could be simultaneously having a hand in the domain of destruction, and glory, and madness, and magic. I just think that's a good mix for someone who has clearly been so affected by the curse of knowing too much. Rituals for clerics, meditative silence, living a life of walking the middle of the road, whereby you seek to affect the balance of the universe in no way, and in so doing, affect it profoundly. I kind of get that Hoodrazai, more by disposition than, you know, just kind of by being at the wrong place at the right time, is very zen. Because Hoodrazai clearly doesn't want to affect things. Hoodrazai is not saying a whole lot, so I feel like a monk character might really be perfect for Hoodrazai. Maybe even have a vow of silence. That might be tough to roleplay, though. Okay, so there's also Kib. Kib is kind of a big one, and Kib is the god who created most of what we see on a daily basis in terms of our world. So Kib is this god who got a little bit bored after about a million years after the gods first created everything. And when they created, you know, the world and the universe and everything, it was good, but eventually Kib wanted something more spectacular. So Kib created animals on the earth. The other gods got nervous because they felt that if Kib created animals, then eventually Kib would create mankind, and mankind would discover the secrets of the gods. And sure enough, when Kib got bored of animals, he created humans. The gods stepped in, though, and placed a veil of ignorance between the gods and humans. Kib was also the first god to speak with words instead of his hands, or her hands, and Kib did this by mimicking humans. So humans invented language, and the gods copied them, not the other way around. I thought that was pretty interesting. For the alignment of Kib, I figured chaotic good. I mean, Kib went against, clearly, the wishes of the other gods, because Kib thought life would be a good thing. So domains would be good, healing, animal, plant. I think anything that promotes growth and health and life would probably fall within Kib's domains. And similarly, I think that Kib would appreciate positive types of rituals from their clerics, you know, whether it's tending to plants or helping others or building community or partaking in tantric sex or enjoying life, whatever it is, something that's very kind of positive and life-affirming and that sort of thing, not destructive at all. I definitely see Kib as being very, very good. I figured a good bonus for a cleric of Kib, and I didn't come up with any bonuses for any other god, but this one just shouted at, you know, it was just so obvious. Language. You could take two extra languages for free or something, which, you know, isn't really that big of a deal, and you could even make it maybe even bigger. Maybe a cleric of Kib knows all languages, you know, who knows, or has some kind of bonus to understanding languages. Either way, it should be kind of a big deal, because Kib, after all, was the first god to speak language, so that's a big thing. Okay, so on the opposite side of Kib, of course, is Mung. M-U-N-G. Mung. Mung was jealous of all that Kib had created, so Mung created death. Mung walks in the still places, the dark places. This is kind of an easy one. I have to say, the source text doesn't really capitalize on this, but it's just so obvious that it's impossible not to go with it, and that is that Mung is lawful evil. Or at least evil. I interpreted Mung as kind of lawful evil just because the text didn't really make Mung out to be really crazy or really evil. It's more just about, okay, well, there's life now, so there's gotta be death. And to me, that's kind of a lawful stance. So, lawful evil. Domains, death, destruction, war, and darkness. Rituals, I think, would be prayer and sacrifice. Mung actually ignores prayers, like all the other gods, but the priests of Mung still offer prayers, and they accept offerings from other people, and they give these offerings up to Mung in hopes that Mung will eventually be appeased. So the priests of Meng are very frequently trying to kind of calm Meng down, I think. Which, I mean, could, I guess you could kind of say, well, that's that almost seems a little bit chaotic evil, but I'm not so sure. I'm not 100% sure that that's Meng, but it's probably open to interpretation. So the priests of Meng, the clerics of Meng, do pray to Meng. But again, Meng has already said that Meng doesn't listen. So the priests of Meng accept offerings in hopes that Meng will be appeased. And when Manayud Sushai awakens, Meng will be tasked to engage in a fight to the death with time. And I think that's probably a good intro to the gods of Pagana. Again, you can get my text on, I'll put a link in the show notes. It'll be on drivethroughrpg.com for sure. And we'll continue the Pantheon next episode, where we'll talk about exciting ones like Sish, the Destroyer of Hours, Zorjak, and Slid. Really good stuff coming up. So thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as Not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.